Okay. Well, you don't. You can. You only have to answer what you want to answer, by the way. And
oh,
a
that's
lot of
okay.
these are kind of these are sort of questions that are, you know, about you, but also about education and about your thoughts on it, and just whatever you feel. And we don't have to stick to my questions, by the way. If there's other things you'd rather mention, or you know, if it goes somewhere else, that's fine with me. I'm not picky
okay.
about that at all. So.
Okay.
Just for my file, I better say, okay, right now I've got Ruth Backlund here interviewing for the Life After High School project, and I'm really excited and to have her, and thank you for being here with me. I appreciate it. Would you mind just briefly summarizing your career and your life as a teacher, just a little bit about you, just so that we know, you know, kind of what your background is and what your
sure.
journey as a teacher was?
Sure. I taught for 39 years before I retired, and I started teaching in the Midwest, taught in junior high, and then I started teaching at the Duchesne Academy of the Sacred Heart, teaching French, which was my major. I had three majors. I had French, English, and art. So I started teaching French, and then when we moved from, when Mark was getting his degree in psychiatry in Madison, Wisconsin, I really missed the science part of my undergraduate work. So I went ahead and got another degree in basic in science and algae, of all things. I'm really interested in study of algae and algal systems. But,
interesting. Cool.
But when he finished, we just have to move someplace to some coast because I have to be on an ocean because I really have to be. And so he had gone when he was a kid. He had traveled to Crescent Lake, Lake Crescent, and really thought that was neat. So he looked at interviews and came out here. And when he got a job out here then, our kids were real little, but when Brianna was like about four, then I decided I wanted to get back into teaching. So there was a guy teaching French and Spanish, and I subbed. I got into subbing, so I subbed for him, and he had an illness it took him about 3 days to get well, and I found out that none of the kids spoke any French in the French class. They just all had written work, and one person would do the work, and everybody would copy it down.
Oh.
So, I know. So we just started, scrapped all of the plans that he had, and I just started teaching them that total physical response, you know, do this, and this is, and giving them directions in French, and then we started with counting in French and doing the alphabet, and, you know, just things like you teach when you teach little kids, because that's where you're at when you start. And so when the guy got back, he said, he called me in and he said, "How would you like to have my job?" I went, "What?" So
that's
anyhow,
fantastic.
He decided to retire. Yeah, he decided to retire, and I felt a little guilty for a while, but finally he said, "That's all right. Don't feel guilty about it," because I was really getting tired doing this anyhow. So it was just a couple of classes, and I had to expand it. So it seemed like the kids were really anxious to get a language that they could really use, that they could speak, that they could communicate with other people. So, you know, that's what started me teaching. And so I got it so that I expanded the program so that we had all the way up to, in fact, I was the first advanced placement class taught at Anacortes High School. The kids could actually take enough to take the advanced placement test to get college credit for it. And they wanted to travel, of course. So that's when we started the French Travel Club that worked so very well. Every other year we did it, and we took a total of 13 trips to France with kids.
Wow.
And they would stay with family, and they had to sign a contract to use nothing but French for that time. And it was a real life changer for a lot of the kids, a whole lot of kids, because they could earn the money through the French Travel Club working, and their parents could help them working and selling alcohol. We did so many fundraisers. But it was just a real kick for me to see them actually in France with people communicating in French. So it was always a one of those aha moments, one of those the torches passed type of moment with me. And it made everything worthwhile to do that, to see that happen. And I would fill out my, because you had to have a full course load, I would fill it out if I had not very many enrolled in a certain level with other things. And I did everything from algebra to three-dimensional art to stained glass to English, freshman English and senior English and history of the English language. And I think that's about it. Yeah.
Now, let me back you up really quick. What years were you back in the Midwest, and then what year did you come to Anacortes High School?
Let's see. I was in the Midwest in about 71, 72. We moved out here. My daughter was born here, 76.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then when did you come to Anacortes?
I think I started teaching in 81, I think, was my first full-time year, yeah.
And then you stayed in Anacortes until the whole time?
Yeah, I did, yes.
And when did you retire?
I retired after first semester in 2014.
Wow.
I did the first semester because I wanted them to have a whole load of kids that they'd have to find a substitute for, hoping to get, some other teacher's foot in the door, because I was just afraid, as did happen, that they would stop teaching French when I left. And they did.
Oh.
Yes, they did. Yeah, we have no French taught at the high school now, just Spanish.
Wow.
We were wanting to get... I think they wanted to get Chinese going, but if anybody does any kind of research in foreign language, they know that it takes a pretty big school district to have some of these more difficult languages like Chinese, that have different lettering as well, all the way up to proficiency with the kids, because, high school kids just don't want to work that hard to get all the way to proficiency. They'll, it'll be like a sampler. Yeah, I know how that sounds, but it's kind of like an hors d'oeuvre type foreign language. Try a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I'll taste this and I'll taste that. But they just don't get to proficiency unless you can do it for 3 or 4 years, the same language. So,
I would admit right now that I was not one of your best students. I was barely hanging in there. I think you were kind to me, and I really regret it. The language is something I wish that I had spent a lot more time, energy, and focus on when I was not just high school, but even earlier. Now I look at it and go, gosh, I could have probably learned. I like language. I enjoy it. I love the English language too, and I should have spent more time on it.
I think it's great what you did. What you've got to do is you've got to make it fun. You've got to make it, because kids at that age don't know that they're going to want to work at something for some future goal unless they're having fun. So it's got to somehow be fun. That's why the trip was so important to a lot of kids, because it was a true challenge. I told them when I was that age, I don't know if I would have had the nerve to go into a foreign house and spend it with, when I was just in high school, to spend it with a family that spoke only French. I mean, that would be kind of spooky. So all the kids that did it, they were really, that was gutsy. That was gutsy. But it was something that they found they could do. They could spent 4 years earning the money for the trip, just in all of these fundraisers. But that's really quite an accomplishment,
Yeah.
That's an amazing accomplishment.
What was your favorite part about being a teacher?
The kids, yeah. And that's what, I think students... as they're graduating from high school and going into the world, they need to think more of what their own personal needs are. When am I having a good time? Am I with people Am I doing something on my own? Am I listening to music, you know, all by myself? When am I really feeling good? Because sometimes they just look at how much money this is going to earn me. This is what I'm going to go into. It sounds like a good plan. And then they're kind of unhappy. And they don't make it all the way through their first degree because they start looking at it and going, God, this doesn't make me feel good. I'm just putting in my time here. But if you, because that happened to me, I had thought that I wanted to go into research, marine research and algae. But I missed being around people, you know.
Oh, it's very solitary to do research, right? I mean, yeah, you're by yourself.
Yeah, it was. And I really missed being around, especially high school kids. They're just so alive and so funny.
Yeah, they are.
They're so funny and they will always be up for doing fun little approaches, you know, singing and dancing and cooking and all the different things that we did in French. They're always up for that, thinking that they're getting away with something, but when they're doing it in French, they're, you know, that's fine.
Right. Yeah.
So that they need to look at themselves and decide what things other than just the subject matter do they like, you know. Do they like being with other people? Do they like being with children? Do they have to be outside to be happy? And I think there's some people that's absolutely true for. They do. So, you know, don't think of doing marketing if you have to be outside to be happy. Look at what parts of jobs that you've really liked have made them agreeable to you. And then make sure that whatever you choose, that's going to be an important element of your choice. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be going through a lot of different jobs and not feeling very fulfilled in any of them.
That is great advice and wisdom. That was I'm writing notes right now, and that's so good. So many kids at 18 need to hear that.
It's not anything that anybody ever tells you about. They always tell you about your strengths, and this is what you get good grades in, and
right.
You know, and all of this stuff, which is important. I'm not saying that's not important, but if you know yourself and what gives you a feeling of fulfillment, then you're going to have to add that in the hopper of what should I do, you know. So,
right.
Yeah, I think it's important for them to learn that.
That's excellent. What was your least favorite thing about being a teacher?
Getting up so early.
Are you a night owl or just prefer not to have to?
I like to awaken with the sun, you know, and you just you can't. I had to have my alarm set every morning for 5:30 for all those years. And I remember once I actually wrote a proposal to the superintendent suggesting that school start at least 15 to 20 minutes later. And I, you know, printed it all up on paper, sent it off to him. And the next Monday, so he couldn't even have gotten it, but the next Monday we all got notes in our boxes that school was going to be starting 20 minutes earlier.
Oh, God. Backfired.
Oh, God. Oh, please. So, you know. That was harsh. That was very harsh. And then nobody likes to have to be grading papers on weekends, which was a very, you know, but it's not any different than the kids having to do homework on the weekends. So, you know, it's just part and parcel of the, you know, that paper grading is something that there's just part of it. People need to get some good feedback on what they're doing, and that's the main reason you do it.
Right. Now moving on to some more specific things about, you know, graduation and kids going out into the workforce and all that. How effective do you think the current educational system is in preparing people for life after high school?
Well, we've kind of started shifting, and it was a good shift, a shift not to just knowing a bunch of facts, but how to find what you need, that kind of look at the world, and that kind of use of the educational system, learning to be able to find out things. It's not like you're going to be able to just sit in one job for a while. You're going to have to continually be finding. I remember we went to a foreign language conference that was down in Seattle, and the keynote speaker talked about how fast everything is changing and how students are really going to need to become so totally. He said that this millennium is going to be the millennia of communication. And he said that's what, so this happened before 2000 when he had this big conference. And I think he just really nailed it. Because when I retired, all the kids, their most precious possession was, guess what?
Did they have phones?
Yep.
Was it that was their possession?
That was they could not function. They could not live without their phones. They really couldn't. It was just, you know, they were into, like, when we have a whole bunch of conjugations or something on the board that we've been working at, but I didn't want them to write things down yet because we're talking about it and creating it. And then I'd give them time at the end to copy it down. They would all get out their phones and take pictures of it. And that was just, you know, I would have, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Wow.
That's so much faster. You have to kind of work with then, you're losing out on the repetition of writing it down, but hey, it is so much faster. Everything can be so much faster with your phone. Research, you know, you don't have to go to the library to research things. You just kind of get on Google, you get on Wikipedia, you just get on your phone and you can find out the answers to things that you would never have back, you know, 20 years ago when you were in school. You know, you would have just gone, oh yeah, that would be nice to know. That next subject. You know, we were talking about the song Good King Wenceslas, you know, and we said, well, who was that, you know? Who is Wenceslas? And so Mark takes out the phone, we're driving down to Seattle, looks it up and says, oh yeah, he died when he was 27 years old. I was assassinated by his brother. This was in 907, and this was in Bavaria in Czechoslovakia. And then this beautiful song came from a legend of him being such a good and just king, which, you know, you go, wow, I wouldn't have known that. So it's a real, it's just part and parcel of their lives. And anything beyond it, you know, is beyond that. But that is everybody. There was in the Seattle Times, some engineering researchers, some from the University of Washington, had just come up with you can put it over a charcoal fire, a dung fire, an electric heater. It was a strange little cup that had, you put water in it and you heat the water, but the change in temperature between the outside and the inside actually created an electric current, and there was a jack you could charge your phone from that little cup that you put over a fire.
Oh, wow.
And it is like in Kenya, it said that there are only 70% of the people in Kenya have cell phones, but there's only 30% of the population has electricity in their homes.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, God, what a good idea.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
What a good idea. Or for people when you're camping, if you've ever gone backpacking out here, just to take this little thing and be able to recharge your phone on building a little fire. I mean, that's just great, you know.
It's
so
incredible. The change is amazing. The technology is just, it's incredible how fast it changes now. In terms of the high school kind of age, what should high schools be teaching students that they aren't currently teaching them? You know, what should high schools be teaching students but aren't currently doing so?
Well, it seems like they are doing a lot of this stuff. They should They should be teaching, I think that one thing they need to tune into that has been around for a while, but not very many people use it because it's kind of hard to teach to. It's called, it's multiple intelligences. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
Multiple intelligences is that everybody has got about intelligence in different amounts. In different kinds of intelligences, like they've got the verbal linguistics. That's a kind that's really taught or it's used a lot in a high school for evaluation of students, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got math logical, and that also is really heavily pushed in high school. But you've got all these other ones like intrapersonal and interpersonal, and the interpersonal are the people that are really good in social situations, mm-hmm. and they're the ones that people always look to. You can just see them being able to function with groups, and they're the ones that become politicians. And then there's the intrapersonal, and those are the ones that are quiet, and they'd much rather be doing a written assignment all by themselves. They're the philosophers that are and the theoreticians and people that do that kind of work. And then there's the space people that have to see things physically in space. And sometimes that's the kinesthetic as well. And that's the people like dancers and football players and tennis players, the ones that really know where they are and their body is in space and can handle it well. And then there's the But to be able to do any kind, teach to all of those intelligences in any subject matter. And that way you kind of hit everybody at a level of kind of intelligence that they can understand it. And you can even give them options on how to show their ability in whatever you're trying to test them in their particular intelligence. And it did take a lot of work, but everything that I did with it paid off. It really, really paid off. So I think
you were doing some of that, right? You were incorporating that into your teaching style and philosophy. Yeah. How did you? You know, can you give an example of maybe of something that you did to incorporate that?
Well, when we did the passé composé, I'd give for their exam. The kids could choose what they wanted. They could write a diary of their life for the week. You know, mm-hmm. those are people that like to be on their own and think, and you know, or they could write a little play that they would put on with other people acting in it. And
well,
then
great.
Everybody had to memorize their little play, and they had to use the passé composé in that. Or they would have to design a game using the passé composé to be able to teach other kids, that I could use it to teach other kids. They had to design this and actually cut it out and do things like that. So,
fantastic.
You know, it was hard to come up with because you still want to make sure that you're finding out whether or not they actually understood this and evaluating them well. But at least then they're doing something that they feel they're more accomplished at than a sit down, get out your pencil and write this test. So that kind of stuff. Or they could do a monologue. They could do one with other kids, or they could do a monologue and talk about an event like. They had to do one where they were talking to their parent, and they had to explain some event that had happened, you know, like why you're late getting home. Besides that, they were a lot of fun to listen to.
Yeah, I bet.
They were very creative.
That's excellent. That's what you want. Now, this question's a little different. It's just kind of you can answer it however you want. But what do you wish you could have taught high school students that you aren't or you weren't able to teach them under the current system? Sometimes another way of looking at that is sometimes you wish you could go this route, but due to the policies or administration or just kind of the way things are run, you weren't really able to do it. What would you wish you could have done or taught?
Mm. Well, for foreign language, it's better to have short classes that last over a long period of time.
Hmm.
It's good to have like very short classes because you have a long French class and then the next day you're going to have forgotten a lot of it. And besides that, you don't have time in your schedule. So the way they tended to do it was then for a while they were on it, if you had long classes, then you don't have that subject for the next semester. That's really, really bad for foreign language. It's better to have short continual over a long period. So I think that's what I would rather do. Or even alternating. There are some classes I know need long periods to actually get to work. Especially the science classes, they need long periods of time. And some of the English project classes could use that too. So they would have these, it would be nice to have, you know, three long classes one day and three other the next day and just alternate back and forth. Because then you could get the same classes in, but you would be having them every other day. And that would work too for foreign language. Kids can remember every other day, but they just can't remember something. Their self-confidence goes down a lot from one semester. If you skip a semester, they go, oh, God, I can't continue that. I've forgotten everything I knew. Mm-hmm. And it's not usually true, but that is the feeling that they have. So it's a reality. Feelings are realities when you're signing up for classes. So
that's great.
So that's what, I guess it would be a scheduling thing.
Right, and you know, that's a funny thing. That's a very interesting thing. I mean, that you're put, because that's more about the structure, and mm-hmm. it's not one size fits all. It's kind of like all of the classes have to follow the exact same structure, even if it doesn't make any sense. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Right. If it doesn't even help them in that. Yep. That's what
right.
It is.
So it would be better to have, like you said, several years of short classes of for a foreign language. You'd probably mm-hmm. retain everything better, and you would learn faster and
mm-hmm.
spend less time per sitting, basically.
Right. Exactly.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. That's good. What about what do you wish you could tell all graduating seniors about life after high school? So let's think about those kids that are about to finish up. What do you wish you could tell all those kids?
Well, that's when I would bring in that thing I was telling you about. Look at yourself and what brings you fulfillment other than the subject matter that you're going to be going in, because you are going to be spending a lot of each day doing something or another. That's what the life out there after education is. You're going to be spending a lot of your time doing something. So make sure that all the things around it that have an effect on you, who you do it with or do it on your own or where you're working or all those things, especially when they're looking at jobs, think about if where you live gives you a lot of pleasure, then that should be an important thing, not just the dollar sign on the bottom line, because it just doesn't do it. It doesn't bring you fulfillment, personal fulfillment. And you're easier to be around when you're happier. So a lot of other things fall into place too. So that's what I would say, yeah.
And yeah, that's a huge in decision making. It's about careers and
mm-hmm.
where they live.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think kids at that age think young adults, I should say, you know, because 18, 19, 20, you're growing, you're changing, and things are happening really fast. But I don't think I remember thinking about that stuff a lot.
Well, I know in my last, when I was the last couple of years, it was nice that we had the same advisory class for all 4 years. You go all the way through, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. And I remember with my last advisory class, we talked a lot about that. We kind of looked at what kinds of jobs each kid there would be maybe, you know, suited to, just in terms of the way they needed to have other people around or needed to not have other people around. And we discussed a little of that, and when they did their actual senior presentation on possible jobs, they quite a few of them were able to work that in their choices. So I think that it could be done through advisory. If, you know, psychology has always been the backdoor science class. It's never been given the prestige of some of the other classes, but it's really very important for kids to take into their lives.
Yeah. That's good. Advisory board. I like that idea. And how long you were a part of that senior advisory board for most of your time, or
yeah,
for how
most
long?
Of the time. It went through a lot of permutations, and a lot of, you know, just different forms. But this one, because you used to be able to do a senior project and you could figure out what project you wanted to do, but now they changed it into a senior presentation, and its main thing was forcing kids to look at life post high school. So they had to actually come up with some possible choices and then do research on the training that you'd need for it. And so they had to look into it a bit more and then actually either do a job shadow with somebody in one of those fields and then write up their comments about it or talk about it in their when they do their senior presentation, or if they did a project, it had to be a project that dealt with that particular career that they were wanting to look at more closely. Like I had one student who was really good, and I had her in three classes. I had had her in French and in English and in art, and she had decided she was a real go-getter, that she was going to go into architecture. So after her sophomore year, I think it was her sophomore year, she got to go to New York, to Columbia University in the summertime. It was classes for potential students going into architecture. And she came back and she said, "No, that was not for me. You know, I'm not that good in art, madame." And it was very artsy-fartsy. And she said, "What I like about architecture is the engineering."
So she took
that year and did a project on a research project on all the different kinds of engineering there are. And she researched all of the different kinds. Civil, structural, I mean, you know, there were like about six different kinds, and where are good schools for them, how much it costs, how much you can expect to make, what a typical job day would be like, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. She presented it, and she got it done and got an early acceptance to engineering school, and it was all because of that advisory class and what they were having the kids do, that she realized it before she got, you know, that would be a huge investment to get into a school for that and then discover, oh, this is not at all what I like. So
that is incredible. That story you gave me just now sounds like an incredibly great idea. And I don't think that that's happening across the board in schools. And it definitely wasn't in, you know, 20 years ago. I don't think that was
That was one of the more, you know, I suppose this would be in the last, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Last 12 years, maybe we've been doing that particular one.
And it's
had a lot of wrinkles, but they're getting worked out. And cases like that, you realize that's what it's supposed to be. That's what it's supposed to be, a sounding board for these kids, for them to, you know, to get serious. And some kids are just not going to get serious, period. But
right.
They're just not ready. They're just not at that point yet. They've got to get into the reality of life before they're going to want to do any of that. But some kids are really learning to use then the classes in the high school to help them decide what they would like to do later on. So that's what it's good for. It's good for them.
What a great project. You know, speaking of which, do you recommend, is there any resources that you guys used to develop that program? Were there other programs you modeled or books that you read or anything? I'm curious, just if not, that's okay.
We found that, I think it was put together kind of like a Frankenstein thing from several different programs that we had tried earlier. And it was all directed through the advisors. They actually had a person that was an aide that was hired to help get all of these things together for the advisory class. So it became an important role of the advisory, the counseling department. So they would know more about what they went through to get to where it is now.
Well, that's great. What a great idea. What are high school kids and their parents doing right when it comes to preparing themselves for life after high school? In other words, you know, I know kids, sometimes the parents are involved sometimes, and, you know, they might be doing some wrong things, but what are they doing right in general, like when you look at kids in general?
Well, I think that most of the parents I see in Anacortes, of course, this is a small town too, but they are really engaged in their kids' education. When you have parents come in at all levels, it's very well attended by the parents. They have a good relationship with the school district. It's like an all-encompassing. It's like you're not. It used to be that we, even though we taught some of the very similar things, the middle school and the high school, that we didn't communicate much, the teaching
right.
and the advising, and they've opened that up a lot.
Oh,
they've
great!
Really gotten into a lot of staff development that covers both of them, and you know, some of the kids could come up and take some classes at the high school, and it was part of their schedule down there. So, so I think that's being done right. And
if you broadened it out, you know, outside of just Anacortes, you know, looking at the bigger picture, like the United States, and you know, would that change your answer at all? Thinking about how we are in general public school system.
Well, I think the main thing that we have to really be into right now, especially with in view of our new Department of Education head, is that we need to continually be thinking about educating every student. And that should be public education is very important. And we need to make sure that we keep thinking about all students, not just, you know, letting them go spend money at this school to get this training and at that school to get that training. So it's good to keep the public in mind. I believe that it's really, some of these private schools are great. Don't get me wrong, they're great. But you really have to think of all the kids. There aren't very many activities at the high school that you can do that are interesting that would not benefit any kid that was in the class, not just, you know, the gifted. So I guess that's the main thing that I'm worried about right now with education, is that it's going to start getting splintered, and you're going to have the poor people are not going to be able to get a good education for their kids because everybody's going to be going to a private school. The good teachers are going to be teaching in a private school, and you're going to get people that should be teaching public education that aren't. And so that worries me. That really worries me.
Yeah, that is a concern. Well, what mistakes do you see, you know, students making in high school when it comes to thinking about their future and taking action? You know, what are they doing wrong? I don't just mean that, you know, there's always a couple really troubled kids. They may have many issues going on at home, but also just in general. Do you see them over and over again making mistakes, doing something that is hurting their future, anything like that?
Oh, just the same, you know. same mistakes, getting in with the wrong crowd when they know it, just because they really need acceptance instead of valuing themselves and what friends are going to help them. So I guess it's just the same stuff, putting your head in the ground instead of thinking about a future, just having a good time right now. And, you know, that type of stuff that has never changed. That's always going to be the same. Some kids are going to have a real hard time thinking about their future. That's, you know, how do you make them think about their future? Yeah. That's the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because some of them just don't want to. They don't want to do that. They just want to do what feels good right now. And so that's something that everybody needs to look at. And seeing their value to some future world. Because a lot of kids don't get into that because they don't think they're worth anything. So we get back to psychology, don't we?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So their self-worth, their personal value.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why do you think, I'm not expecting you to have all the answers, but I'm so curious about that particular subject that, you know, the kids who stick their head in the sand, like you say, and, you know, kind of avoiding the future, or just the ones that really feel like they've got to belong in some crowd. Why do you think some kids do that and other kids don't? It seems to me always been a mystery why some of the kids they focused on the future, they were excited about it, or at least they saw the importance of it. And then there's other kids that just, it was like polar opposite, you know, couldn't care less. I always thought that was really interesting about that particular age. Maybe it's just teenagers or something. I don't know.
Well, I think that comes really early. I think that comes in preschool.
Wow.
That part in feeling valued is really something that's got to be in the home. They've got a little. I remember my parents. They were great. They were really great. But they would, from little on, when we'd be doing things as a family, they would ask my opinion, what I wanted to do, and it wasn't just. They really asked me, you know, and they would listen to what I had to say. So I think a lot of it comes from just listening to your kids. To what they have to say. That sounds pretty simple, but I'm sure it's when you're so busy and you're trying to make plans for things, you might not want to take time to listen to this kid who doesn't have the experience you do, but boy, it's important. So that's what I think that really makes a big difference.
That's great. You know, I just got some good parenting advice from you. I wrote that down. I got an 8 and a 7-year-old, so I definitely needed to hear that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Right.
Yeah, they do have great stories, and sometimes I do listen well, and sometimes I catch myself, whatever, you know, not really kind of brushing them off sometimes. So that's a good reminder. Thank you.
Well, Jesse, I'm going to have to go. We're going to this party, the Swinomish Tribe. Mark is still working one day every other week for the Swinomish Tribe, and they're having their Christmas party tonight. So I'm going to have to get going here.
Well, this is great. I really appreciate everything you've given me today. This is fantastic. If it's okay, I'll email you maybe a couple follow-up things. And
please.
This was so helpful to me. You have no idea. So, again, I appreciate your time, and I hope you enjoy your evening.
It's a wonderful endeavor. I'm really glad you're doing it, and I wish you the very best.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.